Good morning. Today is Wednesday, November the 30th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County's supervisor for a month, Mark Lovelace.
How are you doing?
It is almost a month, isn't it?
Yeah, just about that.
That's right, because you don't work on Saturday.
Oh, we work pretty much every day to some one degree or another.
Well, December 31st, on New Year's Eve weekend, are you going to be working?
I would bet you I would probably still be doing emails on New Year's Eve.
Goodbye.
Maybe not a lot.
Don't care. Yeah. See you later. Yeah. All those emails you've wanted to send out for a long, long, long time. Yeah. I might even get one of those.
I'll just say, please, I'll just forward them to my successor. How's that?
Yeah, no, no, that doesn't even feel good.
Go talk to Mike.
Yeah. I don't live here anymore. Our quote this morning comes from Pablo Picasso. Quote, "When I was a kid, I drew like Michelangelo. Michelangelo, depending on your preference. It took me years to learn to draw like a kid." Ain't that the truth? Huh? Being kid-like. Oh, my, oh, my. So, with the elections as they came down in California, any surprises for you?
I don't think there were really any surprises in California. The one thing that I would say was kind of a surprise was we had a couple of initiatives that were opposing initiatives on the same issue, you know, regarding death penalty and regarding plastic bags. And very often when that kind of thing happens, there's a tendency for voters to, you know, reject both. That the confusion, you know, it's often run that way, like the plastic bag one was run intentionally to, like, cloud the voters' minds, you know, make them not sure of which way to go.
Were you exposed to something about the plastic bag proposition, either of the two?
Well, Prop 67.
I didn't see either anything, nothing about it. I was disappointed. I just wanted to see what the arguments were.
Yeah. Our Board of Supervisors had supported Prop 67. We'd supported SB 270, that the bill in the legislature, which had been passed and signed by the governor, which Prop 67 was a referendum on that bill. And so the implementation of it, of that law, had been held up until determined by the voters.
Isn't that a full circle thing? Paper bags, back when we had the pulp mills.
Mm-hmm.
We go to plastic because we want to save trees. Now we're getting out of plastic, back to paper bags. I guess we want to save the paper mills now.
Well, the idea is to move towards reusables and stop. You know,
yeah, but you know, you've seen some of those bags that people use.
And
you'd never want to put any food in those things.
Well, remember, this is only for the carry-out bags.
The grocery store bags.
Yeah, but the produce bags, things like that are still.
The ones you stuff in yourself. The ones with the green twisties.
Yeah, those are still. People can still use those. You know, the stores still give those out. So, you know, there's.
I don't know if you've seen. We shop primarily in three different grocery stores. Mm-hmm. Two of the three I've seen people take those little hand carts.
Mm-hmm.
Take them. Just take them. They're not going to pay for the paper bags. You know, if the store is one of those that charges
mm-hmm.
or is making a profit with them, the fee mm-hmm. is higher than what the costs are significantly. Mm-hmm. And they just get mad, say, screw it, and they take it. And they now use that as their shopping cart when they come back. I've seen one guy bring one back in.
Hmm.
Say, yeah, this is mine now.
Well, do you mean just, you know, taking it out to the car instead of carrying
and in the front
out?
Seat and driving out of the parking lot, yeah.
The basket, you mean?
Yeah,
the little
hand basket.
I thought you meant the carts with wheels.
Oh, no, not the...
That's a bit of work.
No, well, yeah, and then they kind of lock up when you leave the premises mm-hmm. and everything, yeah.
And there's a lot of different, you know, approaches to how people do that. Most of our grocery stores in Humboldt County, Ray's, Murphy's, Co-op, Eureka Natural Foods, had already gone to not giving out single-use plastic bags already.
Mm-hmm. You've never heard us before because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us. Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Mark Lovelace. Mark, the concept of some of the propositions, the poundage of propositions,
yeah,
was something that got a lot of people's attention. And I don't know if it was in the climate of throw the bums out, that the whole Trump movement kind of exemplified or not, but I was getting far lefties, far righties, guys around where I am, guys around where you are, saying, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Just flat out, this is crazy.
17 ballot initiatives.
Where are our electeds?
Mm-hmm.
And why aren't they doing their job? What kind of sense did you get with the variety that was there, the duplicity, you know, with a couple of them that you alluded to earlier? Are people doing their job? Or is this just kind of like the lobbying representative entities from everybody in the state finally figuring out how to get something on the ballot?
Well, I think there's a variety pack, you know, in terms of the approaches on things there. You know, anything that's a tax measure, you know, has to go to the voters. And so there are, you know, of course, a number of those on this year's ballot, and of course, including, you know, the extension of Jerry Brown's Prop 30 from a few years ago.
Yeah, all the school bonds and then the local school
bonds. Yeah, all the locals. But there were the tobacco tax, the $2 a pack.
That was quite an impressive jump, wasn't it?
Yeah, significant.
I guess we
jump.
Must have a lot of non-smokers voting these years.
Well, you know, you could go to Jerry Brown's quote on, you know, Prop 30 years ago. He said, if you want to get the voters to support a tax, come up with one that 90% of the voters don't have to pay for.
Yeah. They get to pay for it, whoever they are, yeah.
Yeah. People are, you know, supportive of that, and so as the number of smokers goes down, the ability for people that the weight of those people who, you know, are hit by that to say, hey, wait a minute, I don't have to pay an additional $2 per pack.
Yeah, I wish I had more knowledge. I don't never have, but right over this, you know, in Oregon and Washington, the liquor prices are set by the state.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of liquor stores. I think the one that most folks in the area, if they're familiar with any of them, used to be called Last Chance, First Chance.
Oh,
just across the state line in Smith River. Now there's one that kind of put those guys out that one of the tribes runs. You'll see RVs pull in, and they're wheeling literally cases on dollies out, and they're loading up, and they've got Washington plates, they got Oregon plates, and you know they'll come down and do that. In the past, there had been some discussion that cigarettes were going to be the same way. You know, you see guys go into Costco in Oregon, and they got the flatbed, and it's loaded to the gills. I wonder if this is just going to exacerbate that scenario where people are going to be buying in Nevada and buying in Oregon and bringing them down to sell in, on a secondhand market.
I'm sure that there will be an impact primarily in the border areas.
The Crescent of Cities.
Yeah,
of
Crescent
the state.
Cities, you know, the Tahoe, you know, areas closer to other states. That would make some sense. But I think most people that buy cigarettes, you know, my guess, and I don't want to generalize, but probably, you know, aren't putting that much advanced planning into their cigarette purchases.
It's probably more purchase of the moment. Oh, no, yeah. I ran out.
Yeah.
Boom. Yeah.
Yeah, the thing about what you're saying about, you know, the liquor stores, the people, you know, loading up a trailer full or whatever. Myself, I don't want to think that far in advance about what kind of beer I'm going to want to drink next week, you know?
Yeah, I think these guys are probably a little bit more sophisticated, or they might be restaurants, folks like that, you know.
Yeah. Or people that they...
Or a serious drinking problem, yeah. let's face it.
They drink one beer and that's it.
Yeah.
And it probably comes in cans by the case.
Yeah. But it's a really big mug.
Yeah. But back to your core question about the volume. Yeah, there's a couple of different things that I think drive California's, you know, abundance of ballot initiatives. One is, you know, we have fairly lax procedures compared with other states in terms of, you know, what the threshold necessary to put something on the ballot. Two is the things such as tax measures that are required to go to the ballot. And then the other two things I would look to that I think are the legitimate reasons for it are when you want to do something that is not so much a matter of legislation so much as a matter of the voters' values. And yeah, I think that the initiative process is a great vehicle for gauging the values of the public on things such as the death penalty, on things such as Citizens United overturning that, and on things such as legalization of recreational use marijuana.
Okay, what about condoms in adult movies?
Which was a very strange one to see on the...
I was waiting to see if you brought that one along.
Well, in that, I think that is a... There's definitely a huge values-based issue there, but the people that are affected by that are such a very small percentage, I think.
Well, and down in flames, too.
Yeah, and that's the thing is I think most people probably looked at that and said, you know, are there legitimate issues here? Yes, but I'm in no position to judge on that one. You know, that's something that affects a very small percentage of the population that are in that industry.
Well, and even if they made the ballot.
Yeah.
You can't get scratched your head. What?
Well, there was a long story on that one that I'd heard, you know, about AIDS activists that had been pushing for that because he'd seen so many of his friends die in the 70s and 80s from AIDS. And he thought that, you know, movies were promoting bad behavior that had caused, you know, a lot of friends he knew to die. And a lot of people, a lot of opposition were saying that, you know, that's a, it's a very moralistic approach to it, that he's the only one that's determined how this should be done. And it wasn't really based on...
So it was kind of like a one-man band?
Yeah, it wasn't based on science or medicine in terms of, you know, the best way to achieve that outcome.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Mark Lovelace, Humboldt County Supervisor in the 3rd District. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, by Redick, and by the Salvation Army. Mark, taking a look at how some of these things out of the state ballot came to be. Mm-hmm. Now, certainly Humboldt County was out in front doing some of the stuff with the marijuana. Mendocino was a little bit, Monterey, a bunch of the counties in preparation for, some said, passage of 64. Others would say, no, it's just medicinal. Well, obviously the two are connected and related all over the place on that one. Did you get a sense, looking at all of the initiatives and all of the propositions, not just 64, but all of them, including the ones we've talked about, that it was these things are ever really put together well, other than the bonds?
Well, I think to what I was saying before the break, you know, the initiative process is a great way to gauge the people's values, and on issues, you know, that are values-based, such as, you know, the ones we were talking about, death penalty, overturning Citizens United, and even recreational use of cannabis. You know, it's a that can be an appropriate way to let the people decide, but it's a terrible way to pass complex legislation. And so Prop 64, that was a complaint I heard from a lot of people that had been supporting, you know, pushing for legalization for years and years and years. They're saying, you know, we've got this 64, 67-page initiative that has never been vetted through the legislative process, where people who are opposed to it or, you know, might support it if it was modified in this way or whatever, you know, there's no other voices helping to develop it into something that more people can agree on.
Is it as bad as 215 was?
It's kind of the opposite of 215. 215 was flawed by being so slim and ill-defined. And this one goes a little overboard, and some of the conceptual language about, you know, that, oh, it's supposed to closely mirror the Medical Marijuana Regulation Safety Act, MRSA. There were enough changes in it from MRSA that make it very difficult to mesh the two together.
So who wins out? If there's in conflict, is there, does either document,
well, they're both, they're,
have any way of determining?
They each stand as separate. So only
but if they're in conflict.
Well, there's places where, you know, if someone's currently growing under MRSA, you know, and is seeking to get local permits and all that, the limitations in MRSA, some of them don't apply under the recreational of the AUMA. And so a person can just say, well, you know, I'm growing cannabis and, you know, I don't, which part of the market it goes to is less relevant than, you know,
it's more like a corn farmer, you know, what is stay on the cob and go to your table, or does it stay on the cob and end up in the pig farm? For the farmer, it's the same process.
Yeah, and there's, so obviously speak. There's quality issues of you know, how you'd make those decisions. But so a person, the things that in MRSA that prevent vertical integration, so that someone can't own every aspect of a business, you know, the limitations on the number of license types that you can hold together, some of that changes under AUMA, and so including the ability to consolidate. And so AUMA is going to allow for much more consolidation into larger and larger businesses.
So it's more of a, for lack of a better phrase, a practical commercial model rather than an individual.
It's less protective of small farmers, as we have so many of here in Humboldt County. And but the point that I was trying to make isn't really so much about the details of the AUMA so much as that it's the wrong vehicle for doing that, because you have to accept it in whole. And there's no opportunity, the legislative give and take, to craft it into something that can achieve greater consensus.
Now, can there be amendments made to it? Or is it just case law determination that's going to morph it into whatever it ends up in being?
Anything that's passed through the initiative process is the ability to be modified by the legislature is limited to what specifically is outlined in the initiative itself.
So you make something bulletproof if you want to.
Yeah, so they can say, you know, and with Proposition 215, there was no allowance for that. There was very flimsy language about, you know, that the legislature shall develop guidelines for it as long as they're not in conflict with the core purposes. So, you know, I had been pushing for years when I would talk to people in the legislature and, you know, or other agencies in Sacramento or whomever, that, you know, we know another initiative is going to be coming for legalization in the future, and that the legislature should get ahead of it by, you know, passing something such as with MRSA that had a whole other section in it that just said, should the voters of the state of California choose to legalize marijuana for adult recreational use, this section shall apply and shall create timelines for the legislature to develop guidelines of how to match the two together.
So here are the standards if it ever happens.
Yeah, what, and that way the only question that you need to ask the voters is, do you want to legalize it?
Can they do that generically and say any piece of legislation or any initiative that's passed by the citizens of California, if it's not involving bond monies, but if it has to meet and is subject to these standards, so that door is always open for change, whether it's societal change or whether it's legal change that then has implications and impacts, any of those logical approaches?
The only thing that I believe is really standard in the initiative process is most initiatives, as with other ordinances and legislation, have what's called a savings clause, which says that if any section of this should be found unconstitutional, that the other sections still stand. And that can be very generic language that, depending on what section you find, it potentially could make the entire thing not workable. The other thing besides, those that have to be on the ballot, initiatives that have to be on the ballot because they're tax or bond measures, or those that are, a values issue for the people, as noted. The other thing that I think is really one of the purposes for the initiative process is what we saw here locally with Measure V, which is the mobile home rent control piece.
Well, why don't we talk about that one when we come back?
Sure.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:43. We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Mark Lovelace. Mark, before the break, you alluded to Measure V. Certainly that was kind of an intriguing one that we had here locally.
I certainly had a question mark in terms of whether it was going to succeed or not, largely because there was so much money coming in for the opposition campaign from outside the area. But fundamentally, I think Measure V was a good example of one of the, appropriate uses of the legislative or the initiative process, which is as to provide the people with an end run around a non-responsive government. And in the case of Measure V, the backers of that had been going to city councils and board of supervisors and groups like the McKinleyville Municipal Advisory Committee, and they'd been pushing this issue. They'd been trying to get someone to take up this issue at the local government level, and no one would. And so when that happens, that's one of the reasons that the process is there, so that the legislature, whether it's the state legislature or local legislative bodies, can't just say, no, we're not even going to talk about it. It gives the people recourse around their government, whether it's state or local, if they're not taking up an issue. And in this case,
does it happen that often?
I can't really think of another really good example. Though it would be fair to say that Prop 64, the Adult Use of Marijuana Act, could be another good example, because after failure of Prop 19 in 2010, certainly the legislature has had plenty of years to see that as a warning to say, geez, we should legalize this legislatively or get something in place.
I can see at the state level guys being brain dead and not wanting to talk. So at some point, there's going to be a fatigue, or somebody's going to make a viable point, and you go, hey, hadn't thought of that before. Let me look into it. At the local level, I would think it would be tough to ignore it if you were a city councilman or if you're a supervisor, because if you had 50 people who didn't like you because of that one thing, that could swing the outcome of the reelection.
Yeah, potentially. With the, back to the state level with the Prop 64, it had been my understanding that a group of legislators, including some pretty notable ones, had been prepared to go public with a statement saying, you know, because of their concerns with some of the details in Prop 64, to actually say, you know, encourage the voters to vote no on it, and that they would then pledge that they will work together, bipartisan approach, with, I believe they were going to, you know, suggesting they even had the support of the governor, that they would pass it legislatively, develop a regulatory system in the next year, if it was turned down by the voters, so that they could come up with a better package than what Prop 64 put together.
Too bad they didn't step out and clean things up before the mess.
Yeah, but, you know, my understanding is money and certain backers got in the way, and party politics and other things.
Things happened.
Yeah.
All right.
There's stuff called, politics. That's what it's called.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
See everybody tomorrow.